So in this session, we're going back to, of course, our mindfulness training. So let's review a little bit what we've covered in our mindfulness training before we move on to today's practice. Remember, in this practice, there are primarily the two qualities we're trying to develop of stability and clarity. That we are wanting to cultivate a very stable mind, a mind that can focus on any given object without becoming distracted. So, of course, the fault we're trying to overcome here is distraction. But not only do we want a very stable mind to be able to focus without becoming distracted, we want to be able to focus on that object in a very clear way or with clarity. So the fault there that we have to overcome for that is dullness. Remember, we added a third quality to really highlight in this practice of relaxation. Because most of us come into this sort of practice from a very hectic, fast-paced lives, a lot of tension, a lot of stress in our lives. And generally, when we want to focus in our lives, we always apply a lot of tension in that focus because our minds are so chaotic. This is not really going to work here in the practice if we apply too much tension in our focus. So the first thing we need to do is to learn how to relax, to overcome this tension. So with a relaxed state of mind, then we can work on stabilizing our attention. With a more stable mind, we can work on improving the clarity. So we need to work on the qualities in this order. So remember also in this training here of developing this calm, clear, focused mind, the two main tools we use, of course, mindfulness, the primary tool, mindfulness being our mental faculty of being able to remember the object, to be able to hold the object without becoming distracted. Together with that, of course, we need a way of monitoring our mindfulness to know if we are really focusing on the object or we're starting to become dull or distracted. So that is the tool of introspection. So introspection is like quality control, is monitoring the mindfulness. How are we going? Are we still on the object or are we starting to become dull or distracted? So these are the two main tools we use in this practice. And then what object should we use in the practice? What should we focus on? In the text here, a number of different options are mentioned, quite a few actually. And the general recommendation is use the object that works best for you. And for many of us, that will probably be the breath. A number of advantages, of course, is using the breath. The breath is some physical, tangible object. So it helps us to get us out of our conceptual discursive mind into the body and helps us to get out of the past and the future into the present moment. And within the breath practice we saw, we can look at least three variations of that. The full body practice, noticing sensations anywhere in the body related to the breath. This, of course, is very helpful for working with relaxation. Then we use the abdomen, focusing on the area of the abdomen, fairly large object of focus. This is very helpful for working with stabilizing our mind. And then the nostrils. That much smaller object of focus, therefore with nostrils we can really work on improving our clarity of attention. So these are the three objects, variations of the breath practice that we've been using in the last 2 days. What I'd like to work on today is the second object, the mind. And that is just simply focusing on our own mind. This probably many of you will find more challenging than focusing on the breath, because the breath, of course, is a physical, tangible object, whereas the mind is not. It's a much more subtle object. And also many of us have not really cultivated the ability to observe our own mind. We simply, whenever some mental event arises in our mind, we identify with it, we follow it, we get caught up in it. Or if a mental event arises in our mind, we don't like it, we just try and suppress it. So therefore, we usually fall to these two extremes of either identifying and following or suppressing. So we're not really in the habit of simply observing our own mind. But if we really persist with this practice, there are enormous benefits to be had in this practice. Because with this practice, we'll be able to become the observer or the witness of our mind. We'll be able to become the masters of our mind instead of the slaves of our mind. Instead of being tormented by our mental events, our mind will naturally become more quiet and still, and we won't be overwhelmed. We'll be able to simply be present with whatever mental event arises without becoming overwhelmed. And then, of course, this practice also results in a very calm, clear, focused mind, in improving our mindfulness as well. So this has enormous benefits, and this is what we are going to be working with today. Also, this practice is very well known as a healing practice, because remember, a lot of things we suppress, when we suppress negative emotions and thoughts and memories and events and so forth, we're not dealing with them. And they usually manifest as some sort of physical illness, and then often we project a lot of that negativity onto the people around us. So simply by observing these mental events, stopping the suppression, allowing them to arise, simply observing them arising and passing, we can often release those mental events and thereby purify them and heal them and release them and let go of them. So it's very much a healing practice as well. Now, to introduce the practice in a little bit more detail, I'll read from Alan Wallace's book here again, Attention Revolution, and what he has to say about this practice. And this is on page 83. And he calls this practice of observing the mind, settling the mind in its natural state. That's the name he gives to this practice. He says, "The object of mindfulness in the practice of settling the mind in its natural state is no longer the subtle sensations of the breath at the nostrils, but the space of the mind and whatever events arise within that space. The object of introspection, as in the earlier practice of mindfulness of breathing, is the quality of attention with which you are observing the mind." And now he's quoting from a particular text, meditation text on this subject, which says, "At the beginning, have many daily sessions, each of them brief duration, and focus well in each one. Whenever you meditate, bear in mind the phrase, without distraction and without grasping, and put this into practice." So now he's commenting on that phrase, without distraction, without grasping. "As you venture into this practice, I would encourage you to memorize these quintessential instructions." And the quintessential instructions are, "Settle your mind without distraction and without grasping." Practicing without distraction means not allowing your mind to be carried away by thoughts and sense impressions.
Be present here and now. And when thoughts arise pertaining to the past or future or ruminations about the present, don't be abducted by them. As you hike on this trail of shamatha, don't be a hitchhiker, catching a ride with any of the thoughts or images that whiz through your mind. Rather, be like a kestrel hovering motionlessly as it faces the wind, slightly moving its wings and tail feathers to adjust to changes in the currents of the air. Even when your attention is settled in the present, you may still grasp onto the appearances of the mind, to the mind. Whenever you prefer one mental object over another, whenever you try to control the contents of your mind, and whenever you identify with anything at all, grasping has set in. Here is the challenge at hand. Be attentive to everything that comes up in the mind, but don't grasp onto anything. In this practice, let your mind be like the sky. Whatever moves through it, the sky never reacts. It doesn't stop anything from moving through it. It doesn't hold on to anything that's present, nor does it control anything. The sky doesn't prefer rainbows to clouds, butterflies to jet planes. Whatever comes up in the field of awareness, without distraction or grasping, just let it be. So this is one of the differences, of course, between this practice and the breath practice. In the breath practice, if you're observing the sensations of the breath and a thought arises, then we need to let go of the thought and come back to the breath. So thoughts are distractions in that practice. Let them go and come back to the breath. Whereas, of course, in this practice, thoughts are not problems. Grasping to the thought is the problem. So in this practice, let thoughts be. Let them be means simply observe them as they arise and pass, without grasping onto them, without identifying with them or following them, not trying to block them or suppress them. Simply watch them as they arise and pass, without grasping to them, without becoming distracted. Now, in this practice, it's very much recommended to have the eyes open, at least slightly. And there are a number of reasons for this. And again, to introduce this idea, I'll read a little bit more from Alan Wallace's book, and then I'll comment a little bit more about the eyes. So this is on page 86. He says the following. And he's quoting from a meditation text, and the instruction in the meditation text is, let your gaze be vacant. So then he's commenting on that instruction. He says, in this practice, it is important that your eyes are open, vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you. If you have not meditated with your eyes open, you may find this uncomfortable, but I encourage you to get used to it. Blink as often as you like, and don't strain your eyes in any way. Let them be as relaxed as if you were daydreaming with your eyes open. By leaving the eyes open while focusing your attention on the domain of mental events, the artificial barrier between inner and outer begins to dissolve. Especially in our materialist society, we have gotten used to the idea that our thoughts and all other mental events are inside our heads. But this has never been demonstrated scientifically. All that is known in this regard is that the mental events are correlated with neural events, but that doesn't necessarily mean they are located in the same place. Even without this materialist assumption that the mind is nothing more than a function of the brain, we naturally have a sense that we are looking out on the world from behind our eyes. But this sense of an independent subject or ego inside the head is an illusion. There is no scientific support for such a belief, and when it is inspected through rigorous contemplative inquiry, this autonomous thinker and observer inside the head is nowhere to be found. In this practice, by leaving your eyes open, but by directing your attention to the mind, this conceptually superimposed demarcation between inner and outer begins to erode. You begin to recognize that your thoughts are not occurring in here in your head, nor are they occurring out there in space. This practice challenges the existence of an absolutely objective space of the physical senses that is absolutely separate from the subjective space of the mind. You are now on a path to realizing the meaning of non-duality. So there's a couple of things to talk about there. First, of course, he said that if you haven't meditated with your eyes open, you may find that uncomfortable. And that was my experience. When I first started meditating many years ago, I was very agitated, so I found that even having the eyes slightly open resulted in too much agitation. So I started meditating with my eyes slightly closed, which helped reduce agitation somewhat, but then, of course, I just drifted more and more into dullness. And then when I was introduced to this practice some years ago, when I first started meditating with my eyes open, I really at the start found it very uncomfortable, but very quickly I got used to it, and now generally I only meditate with my eyes open. And I find there are a lot of advantages for that. One, of course, is that it helps to overcome dullness. Secondly, of course, with the eyes open, even though you're not really looking at anything, so we're just vacantly resting the gaze in the space in front of us, we're not actually focusing on anything in front of us, the visual gaze is still somewhat engaged, and the visual gaze only occurs in the present moment. So I find that by having the eyes open, it helps to lock me more into the present moment. When I close my eyes, it's much more easy for me to drift into the past and the future. With the eyes open, much easier to stay present in the present moment. Also, of course, with the eyes open, again, helps to reduce dullness, improve clarity. Also, if we are meditating with our eyes open here, where we are practicing the ability to observe our own mind, be the witness or observer of our mental events, then the transition to daily life is a lot easier because we're already in the habit of observing the mind with our eyes open. So generally, of course, outside of meditation, we're walking around with our eyes open. So if we've only meditated observing the mind with our eyes closed, then to observe the mind with our eyes open in daily life is a bigger transition. Whereas if we've already started to observe our mind with our eyes open in meditation, much more easy to begin to do that also in daily life. So, and then the last point he mentioned here is that with the eyes open, we overcome this artificial sense of inner and outer, this subject-object duality. You know, we have a sense there's a me in here and a world out there. So remember, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the terms of the cognitive balance, that the reason we have a lot of mental or emotional imbalance is because we don't see reality clearly. Whereas if we have our eyes open in this practice, then we really start to break down this artificial sense of inner and outer, this subject-object duality. We really start to get a sense that everything is more interdependent. So that's also going to be very helpful in terms of our cognitive balance of seeing things more clearly, more accurately. So for these reasons, then, we are going to have our eyes open in this practice. You can have them naturally open or just slightly open, as you prefer, but at least slightly open in this practice. And generally, with the gaze slightly downward in front of you. But again, we can adjust that. If you find that you're the sort of person who really gets quite agitated, particularly with the eyes open, you can lower the gaze a little bit. If you find that even with your eyes open slightly, you're becoming a little bit dull, then raise the gaze a little bit. So you can adjust that according to your own disposition. So that's a little bit the practice. Anyone have any questions about that practice before we go into the practice? Anything not clear? So I didn't hear this. Seated position. You mean instead of the Shavasana? No, I mean the Shavasana, you can use the Shavasana for this meditation as well. I mean, you'll be looking at the roof, so you can So that's okay. That's okay. You can use that. Any other questions? What we're going to do in this first meditation is we're going to sort of move slowly towards this practice. And what I mean by that is that we are going to first focus on some sensory objects before we move to the mental object. So we're going to start by observing visual field. So at the start of the meditation, I'm going to get you to have your eyes open and just gaze at the visual field in front of you, which means to just observe the colours and shapes in front of you. Now, with all of these all of these stages in this practice that we're going to go through before we get to the mind, we are to apply what's called bare attention. Bare attention means to observe the object directly. So as with the breath practice, the object was the sensations of the breath. That's bare attention. We're not visualizing, imagining, labeling, conceptualizing. So when we move through these various stages before we get to the mind practice, like for example the first stage, when we're just going to look in the visual field in front of us, we are to observe the colours and shapes in front of us without conceptualizing, without projecting, without labeling, looking with bare attention directly. Then, after some minutes of that, we're going to move to the auditory field. So we're going to focus on sound. Again, with bare attention, focusing on the sound directly, not thinking about the sound, labeling, conceptualizing what that sound is, just directly observing the sound. Then we're going to move into the body and observe sensations within the body. So again, with bare attention. So we're not going to be visualizing the body or conceptualizing the body, simply looking directly with bare attention at the sensations within the body. Similarly, then, when we finally move to the mind and we're observing the mind and all the mental events, we are looking at these mental events with bare attention, directly, which means if some mental event were to come up, we're not thinking about that mental event, we're not making commentary about that mental event, like where did it come from, why is it there, how long is it going to be there, and all these. We're not commenting. We're simply looking directly at whatever is arising in our mind. Okay? So we're going to go through a few of those stages before we get to the mind, and then spend 5 minutes or so observing the mind at the end of the meditation. Okay? So let's do the practice. So finding a nice, comfortable posture. Again, if you prefer, you can use the Shavasana posture. Or sit in a chair is fine as well. So as always, we begin by preparing the body, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. and allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Trying to control or manipulate the breath in any way. With each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, happily releasing them. Allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment through simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. So while remaining in that quiet meditative state, open your eyes and bring your attention to the visual field in front of you, the field within which shapes and colors are appearing. And without conceptualizing or labeling, simply with bare attention, observe what is arising in the visual field in front of you. And in the scene, let there be just the scene. Now close your eyes and bring your attention to the auditory field, the field within which sounds are appearing. And again, without conceptualizing or labeling, without projecting, simply with bare attention, observe the sounds arising in the auditory field. And in the heard, let there be just the heard. Now bring your attention to the field of the body, the field within which tactile sensations are appearing. And again, without visualizing or conceptualizing, simply with bare attention, observe the sensations within the body, the tactile sensations. And in the sensed, let there be just the sense. Now allow your eyes to be at least partially open, vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you. The eyes soft and relaxed. And bring your attention to your own mind. And simply observe your own mind and whatever is arising in the mind. Thoughts, emotions, memories, mental images. Simply observe these mental events as they arise and pass, without grasping to them, without becoming distracted. if you're new to this practice and you're not sure what to focus on, then deliberately generate a thought. Any thought will do. And watch that thought as it arises in your mind. And then watch it as it disappears back into the mind. And then keep your attention right where it was. And simply wait for the next thought to appear in that space. You find that you've got caught up in a thought and got carried away. Again, the first thing to do is to simply relax, then release grasping onto that thought, and very gently return to observing the mind. So relax, release, and return.
How do we go with that practice? Easy or not? Difficult.
So, in this practice, of course, when we begin the practice, many people have different experiences, but two of the most common experiences, one, of course, is we try to observe and we just get swept away. The first thought arises, we're already gone. We come back, we're gone, come back, gone. I mean, this is what we can expect because this is the way our mind operates. This is the way we've habituated ourselves since we were this high. You know, we've always entertained our thoughts. So to expect that somehow all of a sudden we'll be able to sit there and observe them as they arise and pass would be completely unrealistic. So the realistic thing is that we will get swept away again and again and again and again and again. So otherwise, if we think that, oh, I'll be able to simply observe them now, we're just going to get very frustrated. So again, we need to be very patient with ourselves. This will take time. But again, quoting from that great Indian master Shantideva from the 8th century, he says, no matter how difficult something seems, everything with practice becomes easy. And it's true. This is true of everything in our life. If we simply practice, it becomes easy. So it's not like this is something very complicated. It's just that we're not used to doing it. So we just need to be patient with ourselves and persevere. And then slowly over time, we'll start to gain the ability to observe our thoughts as they arise and pass, and then really we'll become the masters of our mind. So this is probably the most common experience. But also, often as a beginner, we can have the opposite experience. We simply sit down, and then all of a sudden it's blank. There's nothing there. What's going on? Normally my mind's full of thoughts, but now I'm looking and there's nothing there. That can be for a couple of reasons. One common reason is, as I've already mentioned a few times, in our life, whenever we want to focus on something, we tense. So, of course, if we're going to focus on our mind and we tense, then we're suffocating our mind. We're not leaving any space for anything to come up because we're taking all the bandwidth of our mind in our focus. So, if that's the case, if you notice it's blank, but you notice there's tension there, then just relax, 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 relax. And so allow some space for these mental events to come up. So that's one common reason why all of a sudden there's nothing there. Another common reason, of course, is that our mind is not very clear. The same when we start here at the nostrils. Often when we start here at the nostrils, many people notice virtually no sensations there. But is that because there's no sensations there? No, it's because our clarity's not there. And if we patiently stay there, you probably notice that suddenly you start to notice some sensations more and more and more, and then eventually there's all these lots of sensations happening. It's not like they started happening, they were always there, we just didn't notice them before. So likewise in this practice, it can be the reason is our mind is quite dull. There's mental activity going on, but it's below the level of our threshold because our mind is not very clear. So again, if we patiently stay there and our mind becomes more clear, we're going to start to notice a lot of this mental activity that's already there as well. So these can be two main reasons why our mind is blank at the beginning. Either we're too tight or our mind is dull. So again, the two imbalances. So here also, we can then use the same approach with the breath practice. And that is, when we're breathing out, we can relax our focus, relax the focus. And when we're breathing in, we can sharpen the focus to try and balance between those two extremes. Okay. Any other comments or questions? Yeah. I mean, of course, in general, eyes open is recommended to overcome dullness. But particularly in this practice, we are trying to just observe our own mind. And so like every practice, we need to have meditation and daily life. So if in this practice we are observing our mind with our eyes open, we're already in the habit of doing that, then in daily life, where we want to continue to be able to do that, it's easier to transition because we're already used to observing the mind with the eyes open. If we only observe the mind with the eyes closed in meditation and we start to get used to that, then in daily life, when we have our eyes open walking around, it's quite a different experience. So it's harder then to work on developing that ability in daily life because it's a bigger transition. Whereas if we already had them open in meditation, then it's much easier to continue to do that in daily life. Another reason, of course, is for the clarity. But another reason is, as he mentioned in the book, is this idea of non-duality. Is that if we have the eyes closed, there's really a sense there's a me in here and a world out there, you know. And if we have them open, then this sort of artificial sense of independent me and world breaks down. And so that's going to be very helpful, particularly later when we move more into the cognitive balance, when we move into the training of coming to see things clearly, objectively. We'll really start to realize there is no subject-object duality. There is no independent me and independent world. Everything is interdependent. So that's going to be helpful for that as well. So for these reasons, and also as I mentioned personally, with the eyes open, it helps to lock more into the present moment. With the eyes closed, it's much easier to drift into the past and the future. So these are the reasons for having the eyes open in this practice.
But if I am used to meditate with eyes closed, and say I can focus better.
Yeah. But then, of course, particularly with this practice, if you can get in the habit of having the eyes open, then you can do meditation in both cases, with eyes closed and eyes open. So this is more versatile as well.
I'm having difficulty with their attention because my mind is labeling me.
Yeah, okay. Very good point. I was going to bring it up later, but I'll address it now. Is remember in the breath practice, at the abdominal nostrils, one way to help stabilize was to count the breath. So we're introducing some conceptual activity to help stabilize. Likewise, in this practice, we can do similar in the beginning phases. Is to help avoid getting caught up in the mental events and getting carried away, we can label. So if some mental event comes up, we can give it a name, thought, memory, anger, jealousy. And by giving it a label, you make it an object. And then you can only label if you're not caught up in it. If you're caught up in it, there's no chance. So if you give it a name, that can help to give us a bit of space from it and not get caught up in it. But with this, as with the counting, keep it simple. Otherwise, we'll just make commentary on commentary on commentary, you know. If some mental event comes up, we go, oh, where did that come from? Why is that here? And what's it doing? And so forth. Then we're just getting caught up. So, yes, we can use this labeling or noting if we find it helpful, but, again, keep it very simple. So this is fine as a beginning. But eventually, of course, we'll need to let it go because eventually we want to have pure, bare attention. But in the beginning phase, there's sort of like training wheels to help us move towards that. Some labeling could be helpful. So if you find it helpful, then you can use it. Anything else? Yeah. Sorry, I didn't catch. What is? Oh, so in that last meditation, we moved slowly towards the mind. First, we looked in the visual field, sound, and then tactile sensation is just the sensations in the body, and then we move to the mind. So those were just some preliminary things just to sort of move towards that. So of course in this practice itself, we are simply observing the mental events. So in the coming meditations, we're not going to go through those stages anymore. That was just to get used to the bare attention. And so in the coming meditations, we're just going to go directly to observe the mind. And when we are observing the mind, again, we are observing only the mental events, thoughts, emotions, memories, mental images, which means in this practice, if some sound were to arise, we're not focusing on that. We let that go. So any sensory objects, we let them go, and we're only focusing on mental objects, thoughts, emotions, memories, mental images. Yeah, so that's another little tool we can use, which I'm going to talk more about now. Right. So when we, if a thought comes up or we generate a thought, if it's frozen, it means we're grasping onto it. Yeah? We're holding onto it. So we're not to grasp onto the thought, we're just to observe the thought. So again, our habit, of course, is grasping. So if we notice that we're sort of grasping onto it, then just release that grasping and then it will pass. You'll find that if you're not really grasping onto it, when you generate a thought, it'll sort of, it'll go very quickly. Yeah, again, that is a sign of grasping. And of course, sometimes we want it to go away, so we try and push it away, but to want something to go away, we have to focus on it so it stays there. So both of those can be grasping, either holding it, wanting it to be there, or trying to push it away. Both of those, you're grasping onto it. So let go of both of those. Let go of wanting it to be there. Let go of wanting it to go away. Just observe it. And you'll find that generally they go pretty quickly. Very strange. Strange, yeah. So with this practice, again, we need to keep the eyes soft and unsoft. Sometimes what people do is they don't want to focus, so they deliberately unfocus their gaze, try and make their vision blurred. Don't do that. So just it's a bit like, you know, sometimes in our daily life we have the eyes open, but we're daydreaming about something. It's like that. I mean, when we're daydreaming, we're not blurring our vision, we're not focusing, they're just sort of vacant there in front of us. So it's a bit like that. And then blink as often as you want. Don't strain the eyes in any way. Now, another little trick that you might like to use, particularly in a place here where maybe there's a lot of movement in front of you and you get distracted by the movement, is pick a spot on the floor in front of you and use that as a little bit of an anchor point. We're not really focusing on it, but if you have that as a bit of an anchor point, it'll help avoid the gaze being moving around everywhere. So that's another little trick you might like to try. No, if they're feeling strained, then just relax the eyes. Just relax the eyes. Don't try and deliberately unfocus. Just relax the eyes. And then you know, blink as much as you want, as you need. Yeah. So again, this is just a sign of dullness. So what you might like to do is to raise the gaze a little bit, elevate it a little bit, and make sure the posture, because sometimes we can sort of go like this. So make sure that the back is straight and maybe the head a little bit more upright. And then use the in-breath to sharpen the focus as well. So on the out-breath, we can relax, and on the in-breath, we sharpen our focus on the mind. A relationship in what sense? I mean, right. Well, walking or anything in daily life, sitting, walking, eating. I mean, basically, the fact of not being in this sort of seated posture, any other activity, it's much more easy then to observe the mind. because we're in the habit of observing the mind with the eyes open already. So then we can transition more easily into daily life, because if we want this practice to really progress, we need to be able to be mindful of our mental events in daily life as they're arising. So therefore, it's much easier to transition, whether we're walking or sitting or lying down or eating or whatever, or working, all of those cases. Okay. A little bit more about the practice, and then we'll go and do another short meditation. So he talks a bit more about the practice here on page 101. When you first begin the practice of settling the mind in its natural state, you may have difficulty identifying the intangible domain of the mind. Or even if you do settle your awareness there, after some time your attention may become vague, disoriented, or spaced out. If you have difficulty identifying the domain of the mind or sustaining your attention, consciously bring up a thought such as, "What is the mind?" and attend to it. Don't think about this question or try to answer it. Just observe the thought itself, watching it emerge in the field of consciousness and then dissolve back into that space. Once it's gone, keep your focus right where the thought was and see what comes up next. If you slip back into a kind of lax, mindless vacuity, deliberately generate the thought again and observe it with bare attention. When you become familiar with this practice, you will no longer need to generate such a thought to crystallize your awareness and locate your attention. That will happen by itself as thoughts arise and pass of their own accord. The practice of attending to the space of the mind and whatever events arise there is like taking a naturalist's field trip into the wilderness of your mind. When you first embark on this inward journey, you may perceive very little. But as you grow more accustomed to this practice, you will begin to identify an increasing quantity and range of mental phenomena. Some of them are discrete, like thoughts and images, while others are nebulous, like emotions and moods. This practice provides you with experiential access to a domain that cannot be observed with any of the instruments of modern science or technology. The most they can do is detect the neural and behavioral correlates of the phenomena you are observing directly. You have become a naturalist of the mind, and a whole new world is opening up to you that for most people remains largely unconscious. In this practice, the locus of awareness gradually descends from the superficial level of the coarse mental activity that is immediately accessible through introspection down into the inner recesses of the mind that are normally below the threshold of consciousness. You discover in this training that the border between conscious and unconscious mental events shifts in relation to the degrees of relaxation, stability, and clarity of attention. Especially when you engage in this practice for many hours each day, for days, weeks, or months at a time, you dredge the depths of your own psyche. In doing so, you remember long-forgotten experiences, both pleasant and unpleasant, and a wide range of desires and emotions. What happens here is a kind of luminously clear discerning, free association of thoughts, mental images, memories, desires, fantasies, and emotions. You are plumbing the depths of your own mind, undistracted by external diversions. Once hidden phenomena are unmasked through the lack of suppression of whatever comes up. This is potentially an extraordinarily deep kind of therapy, and the more intensively you practice it, the more important it is to proceed under the guidance of an experienced, compassionate teacher. During your meditation sessions, internalize the wisdom of this contemplative tradition and make sure you implement the core instructions of this practice, which are, whatever arises in the mind, do not be carried away by it and do not grasp onto or identify with it. Just let it be. Watch thoughts, feelings, or other mental events arise. With discerning intelligence, be aware of their nature and let them slip back into the space of awareness without any judgment or intervention on your part. This is the key to letting the knots of the psyche unravel themselves as the extraordinary healing capacity of the mind reveals itself. This is the path to deep sanity. Let's do another short practice before we have a morning tea break. So again, finding a nice comfortable posture. Preparing the body, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Setting the mind in a state of ease and relaxation. Not dwelling in the past, not anticipating the future. Simply allowing the mind to rest in the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. and with your eyes at least partially open, vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you. Bring your attention to your own mind. And simply observe your own mind and whatever is arising in the space of the mind. Without following thoughts, without trying to get rid of thoughts. Simply observe them as they arise and pass. Without grasping to them, without becoming distracted. Simply be that impartial observer or witness of the mind. You're simply becoming dull or spaced out, then every now and again, deliberately generate a thought. Any thought will do. You simply watch that thought as it arises in the mind, and watch it as it disappears back into the mind. And then keep your attention right where it was, and simply wait for the next thought to appear in that space.
find that you've got caught up in a thought and got carried away, then without getting upset, simply relax, release grasping onto that thought, and very gently return to observing the mind. Relax, release, and return every time you get distracted. If you find that you're constantly becoming carried away by your thoughts, then you might like to experiment with naming or labeling the mental events to help stabilize the mind, to help avoid getting caught up in them. any more comments or questions? Talking to the thoughts. Well, maybe talking to them is a little bit better than getting caught up in them. So this is a little bit, I guess, like giving them a name or a label. So if you can try to keep that as simple as possible, and otherwise we end up with commentary on commentary on commentary, and then we just get caught up more and more. So a little bit of dialoguing in terms of giving them a name or labeling them, that can help to avoid getting caught up. But if we make too much dialogue, then it just becomes more commentary, and then you're just getting caught up in that. So we need to be a little bit careful about that. So in this practice, we are developing the capacity to observe or witness our own mind. And then, of course, we can ask the question, well, who is this observer or the witness of the mind? You know, is this a different, separate entity or not? But this sort of investigation or questioning is what's called vipassana practice. It's insight practice. It's to trying to gain insight into reality, to gain insight into me as the person or me the observer. So these are valid questions in that type of practice, in the vipassana practice, the insight practice. But here, we're not doing that practice. We are doing the mindfulness practice. So in this practice, we are simply trying to develop a calm, clear mind. We're trying to improve, strengthen our mindfulness. So those sort of questions are not part of this type of meditation. So if that question arises, you know, who is the observer, then just observe it as another thought. And don't try to answer these sorts of questions in this meditation. This is not the right time to do that. In Vipassana practice, that's the right time to ask these questions and then investigate, well, who is this observer? Is it something separate from the mind, or is it the same as the mind or not? So that's a different type of meditation. So we don't want to mix the two together. So in this practice, we're not interested in knowing who is the observer. Yeah. Well, we don't want to go for the ride. We're not going for the ride. Yeah. I mean, the idea is so that we don't get carried away. So, like, for example, the difference being, let's say we have a thought about the cup. So here then, the object that we are observing in this practice is the thought itself, which happens to be about the cup, but it's the thought that we're observing. Whereas normally what happens when a thought of the cup comes up, we're engaging in the cup. We're caught up in focusing on the cup. So that's the difference. So if we're focusing on the cup, we're grasping to the thought. If we're focusing on the thought, which happens to be about the cup, then we're observing the thought. That's the difference. Another thing you'll notice, to notice if there's any grasping, is your thoughts, is there some sort of connection between them? Is there some sort of story unfolding? If there is, that's a fairly sure sign there's grasping. That by grasping onto one thought, that's creating another thought, which is creating another and another. If there's no grasping, you'll find that they're very disjointed and there's not really much connection or thread between what's unfolding. They're very random. So that's another sign of grasping or not.
So I have a slightly large question. What we want to ask you is, so there's this contention between working memory and visual attention, because both tasks use the same part in the brain. So if you're, for instance, you look at the sky and look at all the stars, you can't really register all the locations, we can do only one by one. So it's almost like a necessary evil that limited working memory to compensate for visual attention. Because working memory is less, visual attention shares the same space with them. Like, they exist because visual attention needs less working memory. So what we did yesterday was focusing on an object, so we have increased visual attention.
So yesterday we did what, sorry?
Yesterday's practice.
We're focusing on the physical sensations.
An object could be breathing or it could be like a visual object, right?
Well, yesterday we were focusing on the physical sensations of the breath. We weren't focusing on a visual object. We never did visual object, except this morning when we looked at the colors and shapes. But go on.
So the idea is that you focus your attention on something, so your working memory reduces, and you want to increase your attention more and more, so the working memory has nothing left. So you reject all the things that come into the working memory, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean here by reducing working memory. So in this mindfulness practice, as a beginning point, we could use a visual object, but it's very coarse. We have to really move to more subtle object like the sensations of the breath, or even better, a mental object. So if we're using, like here, the mental object, I'm not sure how this question relates to this idea of working memory. Breath, yeah. I'm still not sure what you're meaning here. Oh yeah, you can use a mental image as an object of this practice. Well, it's not a visual, it's a mental image of a visual object. So we can, for example, use a mental image of this stick here. So we can imagine this mental image of the stick in front of us or wherever. But this is a mental image that we are focusing on. And then?
And then he told us, in case there are distractions, then we use the counting.
The counting as a... Well, no, not one appears. That's we're not visualizing one. We're just mentally counting. Yeah.
Same thing, right?
Right.
I mean, like, you're mentally counting.
Right.
Maybe, like, one appears. Right?
No.
You need one and then...
No. No. Then it's becoming too elaborate. Then it becomes some elaborate thing, and then we're just caught up in distraction. So this counting is really only a tool to use as a beginner. It's actually an obstacle. But maybe it's better to do that than get caught up in all sorts of other conceptual distractions. So it's one step improved. But of course, at some point, we're going to need to let go of that altogether, because it still is conceptual activity. It still is a little bit of a distraction to the object, which in this case was the physical sensations of the breath. In this exercise? No. What we can do, again, as a very beginning step, we can anchor ourselves a little bit in the breath. So if you find that focusing on the mind just doesn't work, we just get swept away all the time, what we can do as a starting point, as a transition, is focus on the breath and then a little bit look at the mind. So anchor yourself in the breath while you're then observing a little bit the mind as well, and then more observe the mind and less focusing on the breath as an anchor point, and then eventually let go of focusing on the breath altogether and just observe the mind. So you can, if you find as a beginner you're just getting swept away all the time, you can anchor yourself either using the breath a little bit, or you can anchor yourself a little bit by giving a name or a label to that mental object. But eventually both of those things will need to let go and simply with bare attention observe the mental events. So
So these are only like initial transitionary tools that may be helpful. But eventually, of course, we need to let them go because they are still more conceptual activity and distraction, actually. But they could be useful in the short term to adopt. Right. So, again, this is a mindfulness training, and the objective of this, or focusing on the breath, or whatever the object, is eventually our mind will become calm, clear, and focused, and still. But, of course, in this practice, we're not trying to make the mind still. Trying to make the mind still is just going to create more turbulence. That's a natural byproduct of this practice, because every time we can simply observe mental events arise and pass, we're not feeding them, which means the habit of them coming up will get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. Our mind will naturally become more quiet and still in the long term. And then we can have a still mind and only think when we want to think, when we need to think, and not all this garbage coming up all the time that's causing a lot of anguish to us. We can get to a point where our mind will be naturally quiet and still, and then we only use the conceptual mind when we need to think about something or work on something. That's the goal of this practice. Right. Sure. Right. Right. So, yeah. So, often, the first stage of healing is acknowledging. I mean, now we're probably suppressing a lot of this stuff. So simply not suppressing, allowing it to come up and observing it and acknowledging it, that in itself can heal completely, or at least be the first stage of healing. You may find that if something is repetitive coming up again and again and again, then we may need to do something more than that to work through the healing process. But until we can identify what's going on, then how can we begin to do anything? Because often it's suppressed. We don't even know it. We're denying it or suppressing it. So sometimes simply acknowledging it is enough to let go of it altogether. Sometimes maybe we need to do some more work on top of that. So if it's coming up a lot, then we can at least identify it and then use some other approaches, complementary approaches, to work further with healing that. Maybe we need to use more the emotional balance training, loving kindness, compassion work, to continue to work with that as well, on top of the just observing it. Oh, yeah, meditation teacher, yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that later, but just briefly mention is that, as with anything, you know, if we want to develop a high level of skill in anything, you know, we need training. I mean, I think a lot of you are students, you know, so you've got a teacher that's helping you to become proficient in some skill, whether it's in work or music or whatever. So, of course, we can try to do all this ourselves, and maybe in the long term we can get some level, but probably we're going to introduce a lot of mistaken ideas and mistaken techniques. You know, if we're trying to learn the piano ourselves, probably we're not going to get that far, and maybe we're going to introduce some wrong methods in terms of how to play the piano. So, therefore, we don't have unlimited time to become proficient in any skill. Therefore, if we have a qualified teacher, they can make our training most effective. We can make most progress. So same with meditation. Of course, we can try and do it ourselves, and probably we will make some progress, but maybe we introduce some wrong technique that we're not aware of, and our progress is limited. Whereas if we have a qualified teacher, they can really tailor the practice to us, and they can highlight any difficulties or problems in our practice and really correct that. So same with any high-level skill, if we have a qualified teacher, it'll make it a lot easier. So, of course, if we only want to dabble in this a little bit, like if we only want to dabble in learning to play piano, maybe we don't need a teacher, we can just dabble a little bit. But if we want to become proficient in an effective way, then I think a qualified teacher, of course, is helpful, as in any field of life. Okay, last question, then we break for a morning tea. Mental events. That's right. Okay. I mean, in Buddhism, particularly through Tibetan Buddhism, often what is translated as thought, the word thought, the original word just means conceptual activity. So, of course, memories, mental images, emotions, all of this is conceptual activity. So, often then, what we see in the text as a thought is actually a generic term meaning any sort of conceptual activity. Or, within conceptual activity, we can divide that into the different types of conceptual activity, and there we can have one category as thought, emotion, memory, mental image. So, the word thought, often you'll find in text, is used in both of those ways, as a generic conceptual activity in general, or as a specific type of a discrete thought. So when I use the word thought there, I meant sort of the general category, any sort of conceptual activity. Mental images, yeah. Yeah, of course, sometimes what comes up is a question. But that is a discrete thought. That thought could be the form of a question rather than just a thought about an object. So the thought could be what pops up in the mind is, oh, who am I? That could pop up. But then that's a thought. We're not in this particular practice here, of course, if the thought comes up, who am I, or who is the observer, then we're not trying to answer that question in this meditation. We're just observing that thought itself. To entertain that question, that is Vipassana practice. That's a different type of practice.
On the other hand, if you suddenly get an idea about
something, that idea, no, not in this practice. Of course, if it's some great, and that's what you're going to find that I mentioned already, in this sort of practice, as the mind becomes still and quiet, our creativity really develops. And you'll find that if you do this sort of practice pretty intensively, you're going to have all sorts of fantastic ideas popping up a lot. But to entertain them in the middle of this practice is not the right time. If a fantastic idea pops up, you go, okay, I'll look at that after this meditation. If you're worried about forgetting it, then have a little notepad and just jot down a few keywords and come back to the practice. Okay. So let's take morning tea break. So it's 10:45. So let's have half hour break and come back at 11:15.